Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sandy Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Andrew normally say, no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to another episode brought to you by sportshoes.com. As always, Jake Smith on the podcast today, fresh off that 211 in London last weekend and a return to the race distance, of course, after a couple years away from it due to his diagnosis with Red S a couple of years ago. So look, we caught up with Jake back in March 2023 about that diagnosis a couple of years ago. And it was great to chat to him after that about how his training's gone since then, the rebuild, his plans for the future, of course, looking ahead to LA, in 2028, and obviously the race last weekend with a good battle with Alex Yee as well. So great insights from Jake, and I think the big takeaway from us was just how open and honest he is, and he's always been that way when he's come on the podcast. So he really actually talks through his thoughts, feelings, emotions, and his ambitions. So great to actually hear an athlete of his level be so honest on a public forum. So enjoy this one. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll catch you guys very, very soon. Okay, Jake, first off, welcome back, mate. Great to have you, and a fine return to the marathon last weekend. Have you had a chance to reflect and enjoy this week?
Yeah, it's been quite a crazy experience. I think for me personally, just it, I proved to myself I could actually get through a block. Like, you may have seen, like, I've done, like, probably the last 6 years, I was said I was going to do a marathon and I never really did, just because I just didn't have a healthy body, and just to get to the start line. And I felt amazing all through it, but yeah, the last 3K, I have taken the piss, but Alex absolutely I've never seen anything like it. And I keep saying to people, like, he's one of the best racers I've ever raced against. I just don't know how he physically can do it. Like, I like, you know, after a race, you look at everyone's data, and I was like, went straight onto his, and he got his max heart rate to 195 the last 200 meters. I've never seen anything like it. And yeah, it's not very fun the next few days after the marathon. I went straight out for a few pints straight after, and after one I was ready on the floor basically. So but now it just shows my body's now at that stage where I feel confident enough to go through training blocks and get into races, whereas like last year I still didn't have that confidence in me. So that's the main takeaway I'm taking from this marathon.
Yeah, it's huge success. Wait there, talk about that battle with Yee, because that was something me and Lum touched upon kind of pre-London, is like, because of that triathlon and those kind of one-on-one duels he's had time and time again in the try, we did say that he would probably be pretty good if it did come down to like a race scenario and really battling over that last 5K. So you were with him at that point. The coverage was pretty, yeah, like it wasn't great.
I wish they had a bit more coverage, because he was like 30 seconds ahead of me at halfway. And I had Charlie Wheeler pacing me, and he did an exceptional job, but he made a joke at 26K. When he stopped, he basically said he's never felt more sorry for someone, because he looked in front and looked behind and there was no one else on the road. That's the only problem with London. And I guess we'll get into it, like, for the girls as well. There's literally no one. And then I like turned around the corner. I saw Johnny Mellor. I saw Phil and Jack. They were all struggling. So I like basically just put my head down. I used my heart rate the whole time. And I realized in that 8K, I like built back a deficit of 30 seconds. I actually caught Yee. Now looking back at it, you know, you say, oh, what if I did that? I kind of just went straight behind him, sat on him, but I didn't realize he was running 10 seconds slower than I did the K before. So it's one of those things, should I have just gone past him? But I think in the moment, like, I was probably saying to myself, oh my God, I'm racing against Alex Yee. And I think I was like, I need to stay with him. And then at one stage, he asked me to go ahead. And I was like, mate, I'm gone. I'm done. I'm spent. And then like 37K, I thought, okay, I'm taking the piss, really. I do need to help him. Went in front. I guess you two have experienced this, but when you actually slow down in quite a long race and then try and pick it up to the pace you were recently run, it's so hard to do. You can't get back that consistency almost. And the last tunnel, it was honestly awesome because there was so much footage of Yee and I, and it looks like if there was just a video of us two, it would have been crazy because we were just literally battling each other. And I would go in front at one stage, he went in front, and it was just so fun to be part of. And then the last 3K up that little hill, I could see the triathlon brain was coming. He kept throwing surges in, like only like 30, 40 meter surges. And he did it up the little tiny gradual climb. And he never once picked up the pace from the Ks before. Just because he put 10, 20 meters on me, my head just went. And I think that's the instinct of like that triathlon brain. It's so cool to see. Because I know road runners, they push themselves like that, but I've never seen race against someone who can constantly be in the hurt locker from however long and just put the head down and just keep clawing at it. But the biggest take I'll take from it is the closest I've ever been to Alex Yee in a race, and I've raced him over 6 kilometers across country, and it's a marathon, so I'll take that. So the deficit was the smallest I've ever been.
Crap, really? That's a
yeah
stat I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, so I think we did English Schools Cross and he put over a minute and a half on me. So I'm now within a minute on him in a marathon, so I think I'm getting a little bit better than that.
Mate, it's interesting you say that, and obviously that you mention, like, you catch up to Yee and you think, oh, it's Alex Yee, I need to sit on him. It's interesting the respect, I guess, you have for a triathlete, because whilst he's the Olympic champ, you're an elite runner, mate. You're a professional runner, and you still have that view of Yee. Why is that?
I think you see what he's done for the sport, like in terms of running and triathlon, and like you've seen him on, when you see him race, I've never seen someone, and I've even spoken to people about how hard and how deep they can push their body. And I think as well, I know I'm not as good as him in the minute. I know in the future I would love to beat him. And I think it's one of those, it's almost a surreal moment still for me. Because I know he's my age and stuff, it might sound a bit corny, but he is an Olympic champion. And if you are, I know he's a triathlete and not like just a runner, but if you're coming into a race and someone you looked up to and you're with them, you just like, you almost fall back a bit. Like, for example, last year I did that 15K in Netherlands and Richard Murray was doing it and I went past him and I had the exact same feeling. I'm like, do I have to sit on him? Because it's Richard Murray, it's someone I looked up to. So it's, I think in that respect, people like, he's done so much for the sport, you owe him that. And you, again, look at Kipchoge, he's got quite a bit of like hate on social media saying he's done and stuff. He's 40 years old and he's running a 205. How can people throw that over his name and what he's done for the sport? And I think by Alex here in London, it was crazy for British running. I know we are, like you said on the last pod, which I completely agree with, we are quite far behind the Spanish runners and the French runners. But I do think in Britain, we are almost better at racing. Like, for example, George James over the marathon, 5th.
Yeah.
And I think we are becoming a nation where we can actually race instead of just time trialing. And that's what I'm trying to go into. Because years ago when I could only time trial, I could never ever race. Whereas I'm trying to get into that mindset like Alex is doing. Because Alex isn't never time trials, he just races. And I think that is the best thing for me personally to do going forward.
Yeah. You talk about learning to race. Obviously, that scenario you have a year is going to be a great learning curve for your career. Lots of lessons to take away from that. But then you also talk about early on in the marathon, were you looking at heart rate for basically all the way to?
Yes.
Was that how you were keying off your effort? Like, what was the deal there?
Yeah, it sounds so stupid, but like, I'm very into my heart rate. So everything I do will be gauged off heart rate. And so, for example, I know this will sound quite geeky, but like for Bath half, my average heart rate was 182. And so I know if it went above 180 in the first half, I know I was overdoing it a bit. Uh-huh. So I was very lucky, fortunate to have Ben Connor and Charlie Wheeler pacing me. So running behind them, of course, it's a lot easier than normal. And I literally didn't look at the pace once. I literally had heart rate mode on to make sure I was working the right zones. And then when Charlie stopped and there was only 10 miles left, I was like, okay, if it's about slightly above 180, I can hold it. And even when I went past Jack Perot, Phil Sessman and stuff, and I saw it start going creeping above like 183, 184, I actually tried to slow down myself because I knew there was another 13, 14 kilometers. And I think for me, especially like, it was warm, but it wasn't like drastically hot. I know people are saying like it was crazy. It wasn't that right. bad, but I think towards the end, people felt it. And I knew when we started, I knew I needed to gauge myself off heart rate just because at the end of the day, my body knows I'm so weird in that respect where I almost like have ADHD. That's the only way I can do. And I think it's quite important in races like that, especially when you're running solo, because say if you miss a split and you're probably thinking, why am I missing a split? And you almost freak out. Whereas off heart rate, if you're like, oh, I've run a 305 and my heart rate's in the right zones, you're fine. You can just push on. So I've been a very big believer in that. And I think because, as you've seen, like 2-3 years ago, I completely overtrained. Right. And I think there was a reason with working with heart rate, it has prevented me from overtraining. And right now, for the last 2 years, I'm now progressing in quite a nice manner. And I think it is very much down to working with heart rate.
It's interesting. Sounds like you're owning that a little bit. Was it difficult to admit that that's how you thrive and that's how you want to go into these endurance races like the marathon, like the half? Because was there any pushback from Gav or was he like...
He, at first, it's like, it's one of those where, say if it was a 5K, 10K, I won't look at the heart, I will just race almost.
Yeah.
Whereas I think... especially with a marathon, because it was my first marathon, I just needed to know I was in the right zones. And I spoke to Gavin about this. Another thing is, I don't drink coffee or anything, but I take these caffeine bullets before shorter distance races.
Yeah.
I didn't take one before the marathon because it basically increases my heart rate by about 10 beats for the warm-up and the start of the race.
Wow.
So we had that discussion. And for a marathon, you know, you have so much adrenaline, you don't want to go into it where your heart rate's almost at a peak and you're like just working too hard straight away.
Uh-huh.
I do, of course, need to speak to him a bit more because when, say, for example, in a few years' time, if I run a 207, 208 and I'm competing against the best, I'm not going to go off heart rate. I'm going to race with the person in front of me. Whereas I think because I'm still building right now and I'm not at that level and it's working for me, I think for now, it's a very good way to move forward until I run that time that's good enough to be, okay, I could medal at European champs. I could come top 10, top 20 at the Olympics. Until then, I think that's the way forward for me to prevent injury more and to prevent illness.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I guess talk about the last couple of years because had a look and when we last spoke to you in March 2023, just like kind of shortly after you kind of coming out on social media talking about your Red S diagnosis. And let's chat about the last couple of years because what I can say, like from the outside, it's been fascinating kind of following your comeback since then.
Yeah, it's been... like especially you two, you've been very supportive in this. Like it's one of those where you almost know who your mates are, like through this process, because there's always those people who will message you when you're at the top, and then when you're at the lowest, they don't. And I just that, and I think for that sometimes that hurt me quite a bit when I was at a very very low stage. But just before we spoke about the pod, I was saying to people, I think I said it previously, my testosterone was 4. And at the time, women's testosterone has to be below 5 to compete. So technically, I could have competed in the women's category. Like, I know I couldn't, but like down to blood work. I had anemia. I was completely burnt out. And I had quite a bit of support, but it was a very tough time because when we did speak, I had to take 5 weeks completely off any training. So no walking, no running, no cross training. And because I had a sacrum stress fracture, when you sit down, it's hurting because it's basically just above your bum, right in your back. So that was a very tough time. I had to move back home because I knew my parents were going to support me to the best they can. I went through stages of almost not really binge eating, like almost having, because I was so used to eating at a specific time. And because years ago, I would only say have 2 meals a day. I almost ate like I could eat like 3,000-4,000 calories in one sitting and almost feel sick. I went through stages of that because I almost felt sorry for myself. And it was a very tough time. Like, I put on a lot of weight, which was very healthy for me. But I mean, it's just little things. But like, you go on to Let's Run, you see, I know there were comments made from me from other British athletes saying, he's finished, he's done, he's wasted. I know there have been comments, and it does make you, when you hear those comments, it's quite nasty. And it did make me think, am I finished? Like, can I get back into the sport? My parents made a joke. They said, you aren't the brightest person in the world. What would you do if you weren't a runner? So I kind of had to get back into the running. But it was a very, very tough period in my life. And I'm very lucky with the support I had. I mean, Gavin and Joe were just incredible. Like, they've seen it in a lot of, Joe's been around, went to 5 Olympics, and she was coming up with stories about other girls in the sport who did struggle with it. And she, basically, they just sat me down, and I almost had to train like a 10-year-old girl from the beginning. Like, my first run was 5 minutes, the second run was 6 minutes. And it was a very long process, and it's still, even until last year, I kept thinking, am I wasted? Am I done? And you go to these races and people are like, people just looking at you, and they almost give you that look I've never really experienced, but it's almost like if they came up to you, if they had to say what they were saying, they would just say, stop running, basically. You'll never be as good as you are. And then you read all the reports, you see Jake Riley, so in America, he went to the marathon for the Olympics. And he struggled with the red ass and never came back to the level he was. And so it was a very challenging process. But I thought to myself, you know what, like, I can do this. I can get back to the best. And I actually posted on Instagram yesterday, but it's been 1,083 days since my last official PB. But it doesn't bother me, because right now I know I'm on a very upward trajectory, but I'm trying to make these small improvements. So the last 2 years, I think my longest time off was 2 weeks when I had a bit of a strain in my calf. But apart from that, I feel like I've never trained this well. But the biggest thing for me is that I've never been this happy in terms of myself and with my relationship or anything. I've seen you before, Ollie, in Cardiff, and you probably could have seen me 2-3 years ago and just said he's not happy. Because I just look drained. And running is such a small, small part of everyone's life, basically. And I think I took running to another, when I was unhealthy, I thought running was like, I didn't have a personality if there was no running. And whereas now I'm like, okay, running is I know it's my profession, but if I focus on my other life opportunities as well, I know I will improve in the running. And that's my mindset the last 2 years. And every time I race, I feel like people are like starting to say, oh, he's coming back. So yeah, I'm just trying to basically inspire younger people, people who have gone through something I have been through, and just show them like, okay, it might take 2-3 years, but you can get back to your best. So that's kind of my sort of story at the minute.
It's a massively impressive comeback. And I think you are right. That's something, you know, me and Ollie were discussing a little while ago. It's like, there isn't really any role models who have successfully come back from Red S and what's happened to you. So you're kind of leading the way in that. And I guess this is a bit of a tricky question, but how do you, knowing that you had very quick success by, you know, cutting your meals, cutting your food, how do you kind of not, I guess, hold yourself back from kind of going down that path again? Because you've accepted wherever you're going, wherever the end goal is, it's going to have to take you a long period of time. But is it ever tempting to sort of...
It's horrendous, because I think I've put on 10 kilos, 8 to 10 kilos, and I'm now running... Okay, I know I ran 2:11 3 years ago, but that's when I ran 60:30 for the half. So like, but I am getting closer. Every single race I do, I'm getting closer and closer to my best.
Yeah.
But for this year, I weighed myself once every month. And like you just said, Matt, I weighed myself like 2 weeks out, and I actually put a kilo on from the month before. And my head just went like backwards almost. I was just like, what the hell is going on? But then I almost looked at myself in the mirror and I just saw like just muscle. Like in the gym, I'm lifting more, I'm doing more pull-ups. But yes, I am still quite scared about going down that road. And like, even starting on the start line of London Marathon, like I'm not the tallest person, but I am probably now bigger than most of the other athletes. But then for example, in terms of the British field, I'm now coming fourth in the British Championships. And I'm like, okay, I'm competing in, it wasn't ideal conditions, but I'm showing everyone the weight that it's actually helping me get to that finish line in a healthy way. But I do get quite scared sometimes with this whole weight thing. My, I think for the next marathon block, have you ever been to a gym and they have that, like, that actual scanning thing that measures your fat percentage or muscle mass? I think if I was going to weigh myself, I highly recommend people doing that, because at the end of the day, a scale, you don't know how much water weight you're going to have. If you guys drank a liter of water the night before, you're going to be almost a kilo heavier. And that's just because of water weight. So I think I'm trying to do everything to prevent myself from going down those lines. So that means going to a gym and doing one of those scans and just maybe trying to get down, like lose a bit of fat percentage, for example, put on more muscle mass. And if my weight goes up, but I've put on muscle, more muscle mass, I'll be more than happy. It's when I go out for food still, I ask for, like, it sounds so stupid, but menus without the calorie counter, because I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to go out there. And my parents even spoke to me about it. And when they go out for food, they don't struggle with food or anything. But when they go out for food, they almost change their minds if they see something's for 1,200 calories and another thing's for 600, for example. It's not very nice to see. And I tried to change little things. So when I cook dinner with my girlfriend will plate my food. And I've now recently realized she's given me a lot more than her. So when I go back home, my mum does the same thing. So I'm trying to put myself in, trying to minimize everything I used to do to now, like, just take them all away. But I, like you said, I do every, it's like once every like 2 weeks, my brain goes backwards a bit. And it's a horrible, horrible thing, but it's only for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, why the hell are you saying that? Like, all this stuff about race weight, my race weight is what I am currently because I've been able to race to my best for the last 2 years. Mm. Whereas 3-4 years ago when I was light, I would race so well and then I would come down from injury and illness and I had to build back up. So I think that's another thing I want to get across to people, like this so-called race weight, people think you have to be almost light as possible and it means faster times, but essentially race weight is the weight you don't get injured, you don't get ill, and you're able to just keep going on. So yeah, that's my like push for it. And I think I still need, like you said before, my blood still need a bit more improvement because they were so bad before. But I still need, like, if that means every single year, so this year 211, if next year I run 210, 209, the year after 208, 207, I could have another 15, 20 years in this sport because due to the shoes, due to the more, like, everyone for the marathon ages getting older. Like, you see Johnny Mella running 209 at 210, just under 40 years old. And that's given me a lot of positive, like, reinforcement almost. So if I can now keep this healthy body for another 15 years, who knows what I can run.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And obviously you mentioned your partner, you mentioned your parents there as part of that support network. In addition to them, how important have Gav and Joe been to bring you back on this process?
Like, they're like my second parent. Like, it's so funny. Whenever I call Gavin and Joe's in the room, you just hear it, like, coming through, running through the room, just shouting, Jake, Jake. But those, I mean, you look at what they've done with Ines, for example. She's a 70, she worked with them since she was 16 years old. I've never trained with someone, like, the two craziest people I've ever trained with are Cheptegei and Ines, and that's not even a lie. But you've seen what they've done to her, and, like, it's just incredible to see her development. And now I think they're now becoming quite, like, you have, like, you know, Chris Jones, for example, top of the game right now in terms of he has peers, he has Clara, and they're just getting better and better. Mark Scott now. Whereas I feel like Gavin and Joe, they're, like, slightly making their headway upwards because, like, I don't want to sound cocky, but they brought me back to life. They've got Ines. They, when I was struggling with Red S, Gavin basically said, you're not allowed to do any exercise. So he was until my blood got better. We literally call every day. So it's quite sweet. It's quite cute. He tells me which races I'm not allowed to do, which ones I'm allowed to do. He will tell me if I'm being an idiot, if I'm being healthy or not. He will make sure I'm almost eating the right foods. And it's that I've never had that one-to-one with a coach before. And I think a lot of athletes are missing that. And in terms of trying to make it to the next level, they need that almost insight. And so I give them, like, I can't tell you how much I owe them just for the support they do. Like, they have a family to their sides and they are calling me every day. It's just phenomenal.
No, they are doing a great job at developing you both. You know, Inez, I've been impressed how she continues to improve as well, and yourself. So I guess where's the long-term plan? You know, you mentioned possibly kind of Europeans, obviously 2026, where is it, back in Birmingham? And obviously you've got the Olympics. So have you spoke about the next few years, or is it just very much, can we just keep steadily improving year on year? And also, what was that London review like? What comes now after London for the rest of the summer?
So London, Gavin was very, very happy. They actually, like, they called me just then and they said, Joe went for a run yesterday and it was a bit hotter than it was Sunday. And she was like, how the hell did you run that time, that heat? So they were very, very happy with it. My drinks, that's the first thing I kind of need to improve on. And I realized my actual nutrition in the race compared to Alex was dreadful. But I think because he's a triathlete, he has that so spot on, whereas I'm still learning about it. Like, I mean, in my first marathon, I took one gel, whereas this time I took two gels and some more drinks. Really? So it's the most I've ever had. Sorry?
What was Alex taking then that made you think he had his, you know, fueling on lock?
It just looked like every single 5K, he knew how much to drink. He had arm warmers on. He had two gels in his arm warmers. Nice. So and it felt like every time he went to a drink station, he held his bottle on for longer than anyone else. So, you know, sometimes people just almost drink quickly as possible. He held it on for quite a long time. And it was just one of those, like, you're just watching, you're like, okay, the next marathon I do, maybe try that. It was a massive, of course, I wanted to break 2:11. Like, that would have been my AA goal. But a 2:11, considering how I raced, trying to get people, I was very, very happy with. And my coaches said it was one of the strongest in the fields. Going forwards, my main aim is 2028. I want to get into that Olympic team and 2032. So, but they don't want me doing any other marathon this year. Like, Joe was commentating and she basically looked at the top 10 athletes and saw how many more half marathons they've done to me. So that's why they want me to focus on, right now, we're going to talk, I need to talk to my agents, but about, you know, Great North and Big Half are on the same day. Mm-hmm. So it's doing one of them and doing Valencia, because, I mean, all the Brits go to Valencia and run crazy quick there. And then, of course, it's London next year. I want to get into a European marathon team. And I think give me another year, hopefully I'm in the 209, 210 range. And hopefully that gets me a spot, because I think there's six athletes going for it. But this summer, I would love to do the 5K on the track at British Champs. I haven't done that for years. Or the 10K in Birmingham in June. I don't know if you two are going to, but that looks really, really good. Of course, it depends on my body, but I do still need to get quite a bit quick over the short stuff, because I can't, if I went to Europeans next year and say, didn't have the speed as the guys at the top, as soon as they drop, like at the London Marathon when Solway dropped a 4:19 mile, I don't have any of those facilities in my locker at the minute. So that's why this summer I really need to focus on some shorter stuff, getting a bit quicker. So then for future development in 2028, I can do that. So everything right now is just building towards 2028. So this year, I don't want to run my quickest. The year after, I don't want to run my quickest. Even in the year of 2028, I don't want to run my quickest ever. But I want to run a quick enough time to make that Olympic team. And so I think there's a big chance of me doing it if I keep this consistency up. I can't afford any more injuries now, because if I got another injury now and had to build back up, it would just kill me. And I feel like I'm on a very good trajectory to accomplish those goals. And I feel like my A goal, I won't be happy until I've made that Olympic team. And of course, Emil coming fourth, every British person now wants to beat that, which is going to be quite hard, especially if he's in the race as well. So yeah, I think he's just inspired a whole new generation of long distance athletes, just showing, like, he was 4 or 5 minutes slower than a lot of these athletes, and he's coming fourth at the Olympics. And I think that's why, like, he's another person I really look up to. I love his training. It's a bit mental, his training. But even for the London Marathon training I had, they've, like, published, Canova wrote his training and, like, that. I had it literally on my tab. So every time I opened my iPad, I saw his training. So I looked what he did one day and looked what I was doing that day. It's so pathetic. But I had it for 4 months on my tab. So yeah, it's just building towards 2028 is the main thing. And everything I do now is, like, I'm going to ask myself, what is the reason of doing that for 2028?
Yeah. And mate, speaking of training, what are you kind of doing now in comparison to what you were able to do like 3 years ago? And what does a typical training week look like for you, like in the build up to London, for example?
So I feel like the training now is like, so 3-4 years ago, it was almost like 5 days quite hard. So it would be like a progression on a Monday, session Tuesday, Wednesday easy, Thursday steady. And the progression would get down to 440 miling. The steady would be about 510, 520 miling for like 8 miles. Friday session, Saturday easy, Sunday long run, anything under 6 minute miling for up to 20 miles. And if anybody wants to get fit in 3 months time, but then would probably be a bit injured after, follow that. Follow that training. It's amazing. It works. Whereas now, like, I looked back in the last 16 weeks, I ran 147 kilometers a week, so about 93, 94 miles, and did 4 hours of cross training every single week on top of that. So I was doing almost equivalent to like 120, 130 miles, but yeah, a lot of it was cross training. Whereas this time, it's just little things. So on a Monday, I do 2 hours of cross training. I can't run on a Monday because we actually found out if I run for more than 7 days, I kept picking up like little niggles or my body would just sort of crash. So that's another thing Gavin found. He's like, you're not allowed, you can only run 6 days a week because, again, if I want to be there on the start line 2028, I can't get those 1% to the minute. I need to be really, really smart. On a Tuesday, I do typical fashion, double threshold. So I got a lactate monitor and everything. That's been really, really good fun, actually. Getting up to like 40K of volume, but including the warm-up cooldown. I was actually quite annoyed when I did like a 27K of effort. And then I saw Phil Sessman do 40K of effort one day around the track. So that kind of pissed me off because I was really happy then I saw that. Wednesday's like an easy run in the morning with gym and cross training in the evening. Thursday would be, that was a more specific marathon type session in the morning. So it could be like, one of the sessions I did was 8K, 6K, 4K, 2K, or it could be 4 lots of 4Ks. Again, I never went over to K of actual volume in one session because Gavin's found 2 years ago I was in crutches. He's like, he basically said, if you do the volumes Phil's doing, you will not make that start line. So for the next build, I could probably go up to 28 kilometers of volume because my body's more used to it. I have found I've actually wore the Zoom Flies, which have a less aggressive plating than the actual carbon shoes. And they've actually really helped me because as soon as I go into a racing start and wear the actual racing shoe, you actually get that little more bounce almost. So training in a slower shoe. Friday's a very easy run and cross training. Oh, sorry. Also, Thursday evening, I run with my girlfriend. So that could be like, it's my favorite run of the week, but 8:30 miling. Oh. And you're just jogging. It's nice because she doesn't run with many people. And I really like that recovery rate. Saturday's back to a VO2 sort of session because Gavin, again, doesn't want me training like a marathon guy. He wants me training like a 10K guy because I don't want to get slow and make marathon pace feel slow. I need to make marathon pace feel fast. Then Sunday long run. So I was doing like 16 to 18 hours of actual training a week. I probably had 16 hours of naps in that week as well. But I finally found it's taken me 2 years to get up there. And going forward, if I did another training block, I might slightly increase the mileage and reduce the cross training a bit. So it's just ways of moving forward. But I'm a big fan of that 10% rule. So like, if you increase your 10% of cross training, like only increase 10% cross training, increase 10% intensity. And that's what I've been sort of doing for the last 2 years. And it's really, really helping me.
There's some training. Yeah. It's interesting you were looking at kind of like what Emil was doing, what Phil was doing. Would you say that motivates you? Is sometimes, does it work out to be a negative? Do you sometimes have to switch off from that side?
You do have to switch off because, I mean, wasn't Emil on like 150 miles a week or something? And It does make you wonder, like, how I can ever get to that level because he's almost doing 100 kilometers more than me a week. I'm very lucky in terms of, because I'm a professional, I do have the time to do that training. But again, like, when I raced him in 2019, he's been so consistent. It's crazy. and it's just been building and building and building, and it gives you that motivation. Like, I feel like a lot of athletes nowadays want to be running their fastest ever times now. So everyone going to track this season wants to run sub 3:30 now. They don't care when they do it. They just want to run it this summer. They don't think about the following year, like just building slowly or getting slightly quicker. And of course, I'd raise my hand up. That was me. That was definitely me 3-4 years ago. Like, running 60:31 over the half was probably the worst thing I could have ever done now, because, well, first of all, it makes all my bonuses very hard to achieve with Nike. But the secondly, it's like, because I wanted to run so fast then, it broke my body. And it's like, I'm almost comparing my training now, and I'm like, how do I ever get back to that level? But I know I can, but I just need to tell myself it could take another 3 years. It could take another 2 years. But every step I'm closer to it, it just makes me happier and happier. And what if I do break that 60:31, I will probably end up going to Greece for a night out or something. But it is a bit daunting as well, seeing going on Strava and see Phil's training, because it's just insane.
But then you and say so.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like Phil put a lot of pressure on, like, you can't take away how good Phil actually is. I think he was going for 2:06:30 because he wanted to make the team. And you look at his 40K he did in training, ran a 2:04. And they almost say what you can run for 40K, you should almost replicate in a marathon. But I think you've seen him, he's beaten Jake Whiteman in a 3K. He is such a good racer. But I think right now he's trying, because of the times getting quicker and quicker to get into Worlds, he's almost becoming a time trialist. But as soon as you put him into a racing situation and get him into racing mindset, he is unstoppable. So that's another problem with London Marathon. You get 10 of the fastest guys in the world. Imagine if it was only a British-only race and we had 5 of us at the front just racing each other. It would have been so good. And if you put Phil in a racing mindset, he's beating all of us. Like, there's no doubt about it. But I think, as well, I do look at his training and I'm like, how do I ever get to that level? But I know it will come, and Gavin's told me it will take another two, three marathon blocks to even get to some of his days. But I am in this for the long run. And like you said, I want to inspire as many young people, because I don't want to see any athlete go through what I did, because it was just horrendous. And like you've seen the last 2 years, you get all these people saying, like I said, saying you're done and finished. I don't want anyone saying that to anyone, any youngsters or anything. So that's what I'm trying to show people. I'm trying to show, like, no matter what, you will always run fast in the future. I don't want you running fast now. You need to just keep building and building and building.
You mentioned obviously some of the difficulties with the race in London. Looking ahead, is that something that you'll consider in terms of where you want to go and run these times? Obviously, you mentioned you want to do London Marathon next year, but is it the place to go to run a qualifying time?
You know? It's very tricky. Like, I did, like, you see the British girls in elite fields. I've never felt more sorry for some girls in my life. I don't know. I think London Marathon almost do it wrong. It's brilliant how they bring the top 10 fastest, and you see the times at the front of the field. Of course, they're going to be quick because 10 of them are running together till 35K. Even if you start dying, it's only 4 miles by yourself. Whereas I was in a bit of a lucky situation. I only had 10 miles by myself. But you look at Eilish, Feely Bounden, they have basically 26 miles of solo running. You put them in a Valencia, Eilish is running 2:20. Like, Feely Bounden ran 2:25. But like, how can she run 5 minutes slower at a course that should be, okay, it might be a bit slower, but how can she run 5 minutes slower? It just doesn't make sense. And it's the fact there's only 13 women in the London Marathon. It's just, why is there a separate race if there's only 13? Do they need to make the time slower? And especially, like I said, like, Charlie looked around when he stopped pacing me and said, I've never felt sorry for you. Like, I'm running 2:11. Like, you go to a Valencia, 2:11's what, 50th, 60th?
Yeah, something.
You put me in a Valencia race, I'm getting towed the whole way around. I could have run 2:10, for example. But I do think, I spoke to my parents about it, it makes you so mentally strong, London, that look at Emil. Emil never did anything but London Marathon, and he comes fourth for the Olympics. Yeah. Because he's the last 2 years, he's had to fight mentally to get there. So in terms of doing London, I think it's so, I have a lot more respect for athletes who run well at London than I do Valencia, because now I've done a London, I know they are running by themselves. And I think in terms of going to Olympics, because in Olympics, it's not a time trial, it's a proper race. And the people who actually tend to do better in London, I do think do better at the Olympics than the guys running 209, 208 in Valencia, because they can't race. They are training for a time trial. They're not training to race. So I think even Gavin said to me, the mental and physical benefit you've got from London is crazy. Like I said, I want to go from being a time trialist to an actual racer. And if that means doing these slightly slower and harder races, then so be it. Because I think I'd be more, say if I ran 210, 209 Valencia, of course it's nice to say, but if I look back at it, I'd probably be more happy with my 211 in London, because I know what I had to go through mentally instead of just being on the back of someone in Valencia, for example.
It makes a lot of sense, especially when you think about championship scenarios. Yeah. I mean, I was in Madrid on the weekend, and it's a rolling course, slight elevation, like 2,000 feet. Obviously, it's hot like London. But if you were preparing for who knows what this LA course is going to be look like, you know, the Paris course as well was hilly. And if you were preparing for something like that, like you'd want to go and do a marathon, like see how you respond. I think no one knows how they're going to respond in a championship marathon until the championship marathon comes and then they bonk or, you know, it's too hot, whatever. So, yeah, I totally appreciate your point. Now, I do think London does replicate that sort of test of a race, especially when you drop off and you're isolated. Yeah. For a long period of time. I guess the fans in us want to find out what the hardest session pre-London was for you. What was the one that made you think, okay, I'm in a really good spot, I can attack, you know? And if the weather was better, you probably would have been, is it fair to say you were kind of going for that 210 just to clip inside?
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, you have to, like you say, you have to, you know, for example, you saw Alex Shee ran a 30k tempo in Portugal and it's 40 kilometer hour winds. And you have to train for these sites or temperatures. So I've run the best I've ever could in that weather conditions. If it was 10 degrees cooler, could I have broken 211? It's one of those we'll never know. I need to, my body needs to actually run it. But the crazy sessions I've done, like I was very, very happy with my 62 in Bath because I actually raced it. Dowie took us through the first 5K in 14:17 and I did get a bit pissed off with him because it was a bit crazy, but I had to follow him. The craziest session I was actually done was, I think it was with, actually did, I started with Ines, but it was like, I would do some, it was like, I did a session in the morning and it'd be 400 on, 100 off. And I remember running 29:36 for 10K with 100 meter steadies in the middle. So it's like 466, 68 seconds and 100 steadies was 19 to 21 seconds. And I knew I was capable of something running really, really quick. But again, because of the damage I did to my body, like the marathon was a massive step forward because I haven't run that distance or anything. So I haven't done any crazy sessions like I used to yet. But I feel like I'm now becoming an athlete who can race better than they train, which is, it's the first time I've ever been able to do. Whereas, I mean, I've told you guys that some of the sessions I used to do, I was much more of a trainer rather than racer, and I'm trying to now get into that mindset of racing is more important, but I'm trying to get into that mindset of I can race to my best ability if training's B plus sessions almost.
Yeah, 100%, mate. And obviously just before we finish, like, you're around a lot of those top guys, people like Kipchoge in that field, and like you say, still running 205 at the age of 40. What were you able to learn from those guys, like just being in and around kind of the race on the weekend?
I feel like they're a lot more, they're very, what's the word called? They're very like calm almost going into the race. I did that whole Nike event with them afterwards and it was quite funny because my parents were like sat on the sofa next to Abdi Nagay. My mum's like eating a muffin and just asked, when's your next race? And Abdi's been like, basically wanted to tell her to like piss off. But like, they're a lot more calmer, and maybe as British athletes, we do put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Whereas I feel like they just didn't have that pressure. And they almost have a laugh before races and everything. And but again, it's one of those things. You see how they warm up. You see what they eat the night before. You see what they eat in the morning. You see how they're hydrating during the race. And it's just little things. Even if I can't remember exactly what they did, but I'll probably go into a training session and it'll probably come back to me like, for example, oh, Alex G held his bottle for 800 meters. Let me try that. Or another thing, Elliot wore the Abbott sensor on his arm. You know, that tells you your glycogen levels, if you're too high, too low. I did that before I ran the World Half Champs in 2020. And I think I'm going to go back to that just because I want to make sure, at the end of the day, I don't know if I ate the right stuff before the marathon. Like, we will never know. And if it means getting that Abbott sensor to actually show me if my energy levels are at the optimum for the race, then be it, so be it.
Wait, does that?
So it's just little things. Like, sorry?
Sorry to butt in, mate. Does that link to your watch? So that tell you what your sort of glycogen levels are as you're running?
No, it's on the phone. Only you might be able to put on the watch.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just like beforehand. So, you know, it says, you know, sometimes if you eat, I don't know, cake or something, your glycogen levels would go a bit too high, for example. So it's just you have to, it's something like they said you want to be in the optimum level, and it just shows you before the race. It would be quite cool on the watch, because then, I mean,
I'm sure
during the race, if you, it probably does go up on the watch. I don't know. And I'll probably ask Chorus about that, because I mean, if you're going through the race and you see it starting to dip and you take a bottle and it goes back up, that would be, I almost think that's a cheat code almost. It's just little things like that. And it's like practicing my bottles, but the marathon is, I know it's, that's why I want to compete in at 2028, especially when you have to try and break 27, just getting the 10K team. But that is my step forward. And now I feel like I'm becoming more of a racer and I'm showing my consistency in races. So that's what I'm doing. And if that means I have to do another 2 years of not being at the very best, but I'm just moving ever so slowly upwards, then I'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And we wish you all the best with that. Look, it was great to watch you back racing last weekend.
Thank you.
And good luck over the next few years, mate. Thanks so much for coming on the
podcast. Thank you very much.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.